everyone. Welcome to another episode of She Runs Trails. I am your host, Elements of Daisy. I want to take a quick moment just to thank everyone who has been listening to the podcast, has been supporting the podcast. This is going to be episode 16. We have Maya, also known as Maya Birdie Goat on Instagram. Make sure you guys check her out. She's an amazing athlete. She resides in Las Vegas, Nevada. She's a trauma nurse. She has raced over 75 races. She has podium, lots of races, a handful of races to name. But definitely check her out, Maya. Today we're going to talk to Maya to learn a little bit more about her ultra running, to talk about how she balances training for these strenuous ultras and being a trauma nurse as well. And we're just going to have fun today, and join us for the ride and just see how it goes. If you guys have any questions, feel free to write them in the comment box below, or you can ask them in the little question mark. And if you're listening to the podcast, thank you again for supporting. So without further ado, let's bring Maya. And thank you everyone who's joining us tonight. Hi, Maya.
Hey there.
Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. Let me just raise the volume. There you go. Okay. I can hear you better.
I have to ask, yes. Where did Maya Birdie Goat come from? Why is that your name?
It's a combo of many things. So Maya is actually not even my real name. It's kind of a common Filipino thing to not go by your legal name. So my real name is actually Helena. Maya is not affiliated in any way, except that I was named after the Filipino bird. And I guess when I was a baby, I used to peck at my food like a little bird, and they would call me, oh, pretty bird, pretty Maya, Maya bird. And then, so Maya bird just has been with me since I was a baby. And, oh, Miles wants attention, sorry.
It's okay, and not a problem.
Goat came when I think it was in 2014. I was on a team for the Canadian Death Race. And I met a bunch of Canadians up there, and they said I climbed like a goat. So then they called me Maya Birdie Goat. I just kind of kept it.
Love it. Yeah, I saw the type of races you run, and it's pretty much a lot of those mountain type of races that you seem to gravitate towards. And I was like, I wonder if that's the reason why she has goat in her name. But now it makes sense.
Yeah, it's three combos.
It all worked out. It was all meant to be. So tell us, Maya, how did you get into ultra running?
How did I get into ultra running? All right. Actually, it was... Miles, come here. I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
This is Miles. He was named after Miles, and he's a little schnoodle. So how did I get into ultra running? It was kind of a peer pressure thing. Like, I had only been doing like half marathons and just doing a bunch of road, got into Ragnar's, and we had the same group of people constantly doing the same Ragnar's. We had the same ones, and you know, one of the years I did 9 of them. I didn't even know about ultra running at all. I was like Energizer Bunny, constantly having to do 1-2 a month. And one person on my team said, I'm from Mississippi. There's the Mississippi 50. We can stay with my folks. And there was 2 other girls who had never done an ultra either. And it seemed a little bit less scary doing it as a group, you know? And yeah, so that was my very first ultra. When I signed up, I hadn't even done a full marathon yet. And we ended up staying together. It's my girls, Shannon and Sam, and we did the whole 50 miles together, and I was hooked, totally hooked.
You went straight to the 50 miler. You didn't even do a marathon and a 50K.
Well, so I ended up in the training, because it was a lot of transition in 2013. I did that race in 2014. I ended up going from full-time to per diem at my trauma job in Vegas, and I became a travel nurse. And I ended up moving up to Washington. And so I trained up in the Pacific Northwest for a Mississippi 50. And yeah, I ended up doing 3 full marathons beforehand. So yeah, 26 was the longest I had gone before I did that 50 miler.
Did you have someone in your group from the group that you were in that had done an ultra before, or were you guys all, this is your first 50 miles
All
together?
first, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, none of us had any experience. And even when we got like from that point on, trying to figure out how this whole sport even works, you know, back in 2014, there wasn't a whole lot of references as there are now online. You know, I learned basically how to do it. I got a training plan from a book, you know, like paperback, and just read books after books, like, how the hell am I gonna do this? And you know, failed many times, ran out of water, terrible nutrition. It's, you know, figure it out as you go. And I guess I figured it out pretty good so far.
What do you think helped you be successful on that first 50 miler with that? What do you think you did that really helped you? Now looking back and now having more of an understanding of ultra running, what do you think really helped you during your training to be able to finish this 50 miler that you've never done this distance before?
You know, we didn't put pressure on ourselves. I think that was a big thing. We didn't care about the time. We stayed together, so there was a camaraderie with that. And, you know, I feel like if I had signed up and done that alone, I would have been much more scared. But I had my girls by my side, you know, and having that we're going through the exact same thing together, I wasn't going to be, they weren't, we weren't going to, it was a no drop plan. You know, and so we had each other, and you know, when we crossed that finish line, you know, we shed the tears and we hugged, and it was like the best experience ever. And you know, like when you have felt that, you just want more of it.
Did you have doubt in you that you were able to gonna finish, or did you really believe in yourself and in your team and your group of friends?
No, there was definitely doubt. I had written like quotes all over my arms. You know, like just various like inspirational quotes, so that like, you know, like if I felt at that point that there was going to be like some questioning of finishing, then I would look down at my arms. And so the three of us did that. We had Sharpies, and I had been saving inspirational quotes in my notes in my phone for more than a year. And as we were getting ready that morning, I read all of them. We picked our favorite ones, Sharpied it on our arms. You know, and we read them even. We had a couple low points, and you know, I took out my phone again and we read them. We looked at our arms, you know, and I think that was the only race I ever did that. But I think it did help for sure.
You remembered your why, and just kind of the quotes kind of inspire you to keep going. And you're like, this is why we're doing this. This is why we're doing this. And you cross the finish line, and 8 years later, you're still doing these ultras. What brings you back to continuing to challenge yourself? And I noticed that you do ultras, like not just in one region. You travel a lot and go different places. Like, why do you run ultras?
I pick the different races, the distances, locations, because I love the adventure of it. I love the challenge. I love challenging myself, scaring myself. That's how I got even into being a trauma nurse. You know, in nursing school, you just graduate. You don't pick a specific field that you're going into. And trauma just sounded the scariest, you know? And so doing different types of races is something for sure that I enjoy the challenge. I like to get scared to a various level. I have the confidence though at this point to know that I can succeed in it. You know, there are doubting moments, and you know, like I've told this to other people, if you've never had a DNF, you're not trying harder races. You're not going outside of your box. I've had my own share of DNFs, you know. Obviously they're not the ideal situation, but you know, it's you can't be comfortable all the time. And I feel like in our air-conditioned houses and our, you know, very comfortable life, you know, when are we really challenged? And going out there and toeing the line, and you have the whole day or day plus, who knows, ahead of you, and just anything can happen. And then going through the puzzle of how is this day going to be? When you come across a problem, how are you going to solve it? You know, let it be energy level or GI or blisters, chafing, huge one, you have to figure out what the best way to overcome that. And that's, I think, a lot of the practice and why I enjoy doing the different distances, because if you're always doing something different, you don't ever get that comfortable.
And how do you feel that constantly challenging yourself, how has that impacted your life on a personal level on a day-to-day basis?
I love it. Ultra running is my life. You know, I met my boyfriend through running. You know, majority of my friends are through running. We go through runcations. We just signed up on Sunday for Bishop race this coming Saturday. So that one, you know, like that's for the moment. We're having another runcation, going camping, hanging out with friends. Like, it's the best. I absolutely love it. I love race and, you know, just being with your friends and then spending the time on the trails. Like, I have so much fun. I have so much fun. I wouldn't give it up.
So you don't see running, like these races, do you go into the mindset of like, oh, I'm going to race it and compete with other people? Or do you go into the mindset of like, I'm just going to try my best and have lots of fun?
When I started, I had the main goal was to finish. You know, I just wanted to finish. And now that I have had so many races, it's more of pushing what are your limits, you know, knowing the course or not knowing the course, depending on how much, you know, like planning you decided to do. But challenging yourself and seeing what we're. This dog. Sorry.
It's okay. So how do you go about picking your races? You've done over 75 races, or over 70 races for sure. I'm not sure if Ultra Sign Up counts the ones you're also signed up for, but you've done so many races. Like, how do you go about picking your races?
So I like to do in the past a fast 100 and a mountainous 100, and then in between do like build-ups for that. You know, since Laz brought the backyard races, I've done three of those, and those are a completely different level of mental challenge. And so it's like this weekend, I'm doing the 55K. It's more get a good run, be in a beautiful environment, have fun. I always do go out now at the starting line with the expectation of myself to do my best, you know? And I've been fortunate that, you know, with a lot of my practice with this, I have gotten faster and I do podium quite often. You know, I love the challenge of that and making gains while you're out there too. Cause after a while, sometimes it is boring out there, you know? And so you make the rabbit of the person that's ahead of you or behind you, you know, whoever it is, you know, and then just kind of, especially on races that are like out and backs, it can play with your mind even more because you can see if they're gaining or getting farther from you, which is fun.
How do you manage not to get in your head, especially when you see someone either close to you or you're just close to them? Like, how do you not let your emotions kind of take over you? What has helped you kind of stay focused and just be there? Because I'm sure if you said there's someone who like constantly letting their emotions get into them, you know, that could impact the results of the race.
Right. Yeah. It can definitely overwhelm you, especially if you're holding a podium and you see that the person is catching up to you. You know, I did Tahoe 100 in 2019, and the girl behind me was behind me from mile 80 all the way to the finish. Like we would get in and out of the aid stations. And if anybody knows the TRT trail, the huge climb, the Black Diamond climb, happens at mile 30 and at mile 80. And to have somebody behind you, you could see their light in the middle of the night. It can definitely mess with you. And so like you have to spend that extra time at the aid stations if you need it and not get so overwhelmed that you see them, that person is literally, you made eye contact, and not forget the fluid that you needed to take, drink, and the food and all of that. So sometimes, yeah, you get overwhelmed and a little too excited and you have to like recheck yourself. You know, it's good to have pacers for that, you know, crew where they can kind of give you the heads up about, you know, how you are doing, making sure that you're taking care of yourself. If let it be, you know, gear change or nutrition, fixing other situations, you know, so yeah, you just have to check yourself and you have to have a good support. And I feel like I have a lot of great people around me, to get me to my goals for that.
Do you usually have like the same group of friends that crew you in these really big races? Like you have your go-to people and they've known now, or do you just kind of pick based on see who's available?
Well, and they're doing their own races too. So it's kind of hard, you know, everybody has like their own races. And so you try to get them if they're capable with their schedule. You know, I'm registered for Leadville and I started asking very early for that one because I definitely want to have a crew. I want to do well at that race. And luckily I was able to get my friend Bryce Marie to get in on that. And then my boyfriend, Sam, he's so incredibly supportive. He's always pacing, crewing all my races. Even if he's not racing, then, you know, he's making sure that, you know, he's the best crew chief. So definitely grateful for him.
And as a partner, I'm sure he knows you the best. He knows like, oh, this is my, like, Maya, you're doing this again. Or like, oh, we've been here before, Maya. Like,
yes.
You know, we'll get through this. Like I'm sure he's the one who's been the closest to you and he knows you pretty well. So it does definitely help. So you talked a little bit about Big's backyard and how, just curious to know, like, how is that mentally? What do you think makes it harder mentally, that compared to like 100 or 200 mile race or, you know, 100 plus mile race? And because, you know, on paper, it looks like, well, great. Well, you just run four point something miles every hour. Not so fast. Like what keeps you coming back?
So they're an interesting one and I do enjoy them. Like I'm going to continue doing them because I want a better showing at them. It's a combo of a couple things. You know, you have to have the endurance to be able to maintain it's supposed to be 4.16, you know, and that doesn't sound bad to do that every hour, but can you continue to do that mile, like hour 20, hour 24? Like it's actually very difficult, you know, because things start falling off, your wheels start falling off and you have to time everything. If you have to go to the bathroom, you may not have time to do that. You have to go start the next loop because you have to be in the corral at that moment, like with less than the hour. And so if you have a shoe issue, you may only be able to change one sock or, you know, and so it's the endurance of it and it's timing, it's time management. And so I've done Beatty's backyard twice. And that's closer to Big's idea. I also did Across the Years where it's a 1 mile loop. That's in Arizona. It's part of Jim O'Corey's races. And it's a 1 mile loop and you have 15 minutes to do it. And so I was last female and third from the last person standing. And I made it to about 30 hours. You know, every 15 minutes and I fell asleep running. I would like wake up sideways, you know, like Jamil and I and this other guy, Tony, like we would sit in our chairs and be asleep in 30 seconds. And then we would hear them like 1 minute and then we have to get back out and then do it all over again. And it's just, you know, and then the thing that's challenging about that too, it's kind of like a poker game, because races where it's a point to point or what have you, you don't usually see so much of your competitors. And this one, you spend all your time with them. You're starting the same loop at the beginning, you know, if you can space it out, but you see them all day. And then the next day.
And it's kind of like you want to look stronger because you want to make them think like, oh my gosh, she looks so strong. She's going to keep going. And you already feel defeated. You're like, I can't. And even though you're dying also inside, right. You're like, I can't let them know I'm also dying here.
I 100% did that at that race. Like, I have a lot of knee issues and I didn't want to show that my knee was hurting. So I never put my knee sleeve on for like hours, which I should have done from the get-go, but I'm like, they're going to see that I put this knee sleeve on and then they're going to know that I'm starting to feel weak and I can't let them see that I'm weak, you know, like everything's fine.
How do you push when you're in that pain cave? What has helped you push and not give up so easily on yourself?
Well, going back to my knee, I tore my ACL back when I was like 16, 17. I was playing soccer. I tore it 2 times while I was in high school. So my junior year and my senior year, both times I tore my ACL. And then in 2012, I tore my ACL a 3rd time. And that surgery, they said I don't get one anymore. That the previous one had created osteolysis, that there's holes all over my bone. And if they gave me a new ACL, it's compromised bone tissue and there's nothing for it to screw into. So I don't have an ACL on my right knee. I haven't had one ever since I've been running ultras. And that's an issue that I definitely do have, is I have knee pain. My whole body will feel fantastic. And then dealing with the knee pain. And so I feel like since high school, I've developed a very deep pain cave. I've deal with pain on my knee, like on the daily. And knowing how to get through that and make sure that I don't create more permanent damage is at times my challenge for sure. But yeah, I have a pretty deep pain cave.
What do you think has helped you develop that, especially in high school?
Oh gosh. Well, these constant, playing soccer, I played for UNLV too for a year, and just creating these challenges and not letting you quit. If you don't give yourself that option, unless it's like a permanent damage thing, you got to just be kind of like tough love to yourself, or find people that are going to be tough love and not let you quit. And after the second ACL surgery, I had a pretty great scholarship to U of A and they took it away, you know? And so like, you know, when you're 18, you just have this like whole imagination, like that was my life and, you know, and it's taken away. What am I going to do? And you just figure a new game plan and stick with it and make sure it's what you want and stay strong with it, you know? And so being an athlete at U of A didn't happen, but I made the best of it. And I played for UNLV, which is also Division I. And I played until that was no longer brought me joy. So.
And so you've always been athletic. Seems like you kind of just moved around what you've done. How do you train? Do you do speed work, or like, how do you train to be so fast? What does your training plan look like, Maya?
Well, thank you for thinking I'm fast. I feel like if you compare me to like the shorter distances, I don't think I'm as fast as most, for sure. There's a lot of people that kick my butt all the time with those. I feel like I've developed a level of endurance though, that, you know, at certain points where people are falling, like just not doing well, I tend to feel better. And so I definitely have my downs, and it's usually like mid 20 miles, I'll just feel terrible. And, you know, at that point, you just have to check yourself and figure out what it is. Like, for me, you have to know your body. And for me, usually around that point, it's usually a sodium issue. And I always can tell I need to take a salt tab when my hamstrings start to get tight. It's very specific, and I always know the symptom, and it's very, like, it happens every single time that I'm like, oh, I'm behind, I'm sweating more than I realize. I'll take a salt tab, and then it goes away, you know, or I'm not eating enough or something like that. And so.
Do you feel like being a trauma nurse and being now, like, you know, I'm pretty sure the average healthcare worker wouldn't, or I guess a doctor or nurse wouldn't recommend doing what we do as ultra runners to the majority of the person. And, you know, like, for you being a trauma nurse and being ultra running, does it freak you out sometimes knowing you're like, when you see something, let's say if you like feel really dehydrated, you know the science that's happening in your body, and you're just like, or does it really help you to know, like, oh, you know what, this is not that bad, I can still push through it? Or you're just like, oh my god, I really need to, like, I probably should, like, stop now because I'm hurting myself. Like, does that impact you when you're doing your ultras?
So rhabdo is a very common thing that I see all the time in trauma. It's basically the muscle breakdown. You have your muscle cells, and they're larger than basically some of the anatomy of your kidney. And you can go into acute kidney injury, knock out your kidneys, and go into renal failure. I see it every week. With the motor vehicle crashes, motorcycle crashes, stab wounds, gunshot wounds, this is a very common thing. And I am very vigilant with looking at my pee. I know what my pee looks like all the time, and the hours in between me peeing as well. How much came out? Has it been more than a handful of hours? If it's been longer than, say, it kind of varies on what the distance of the race is and how hot it is, but just knowing the frequency and the color of it. Because if it ever gets too dark, I will definitely slow down. I will hydrate more. Feeling the cramps or anything like that, it's electrolyte issues. Just paying attention to what your body is telling you, because if you don't listen early, it's gonna get you, for sure. And so I feel like I'm really good at zoning that in at this point.
What advice would you give for, like, when we're checking our pee, like, where should we try to aim at, like, super clear or just kind of light yellow sort of thing? Like, what should we, you know, be aware of when we are looking at our pee?
Right. You don't want it dark. You know, a light color, that's totally fine. You just don't want it dark, and you definitely don't want it brown. Or red, you know, peeing blood is a terrible, very late sign. It's not good. You know, I wouldn't recommend. If I ever had that, I would probably stop, because no race is worth knocking out your kidneys. So that luckily has never happened to me. Like I said, I watch what I'm peeing out for every single race, and I would hate for that to be the reason I would have to pull a plug on a race.
Is there a frequency of how much we should be peeing that you know of? Like, do you think there's like, have you noticed a pattern? Like, okay, for X amount of liters, I should pee every X amount of hours or so.
I'm sure there is a calculation for that, but I don't know it. You know, it just kind of varies too, because say it's hot, you should be drinking more. Say you're exerting yourself because of pace or elevation gain, things like that, you should be drinking more. And so if you're not doing those things and you're just doing a steady pace, you don't necessarily have to be drinking as much in that same period of time. So, you know, it's just kind of depends. You know, you should be, if you're exerting yourself more, if you're just noticing that you're just covered in salt, or if you're living in the South, you know, you're just completely drenched the entire time, that's kind of difficult to tell when you're in the South, because the humidity, you're always wet. You know, so you kind of don't know when you're salty.
Yeah, that's true. How do you train traveling and racing and all across the US pretty much? You live in Las Vegas, which by the way, I didn't even know there were mountains in Las Vegas until 2 years ago where I went to Mount Charleston and I realized how close it was. And I was just like, it was like 100 degrees in Las Vegas. And just driving like 30, 45 minutes from the strip to Mount Charleston, it was like 40 degrees. And we were like, wow, like drastically different temperature. So how do you train for all these races and different, like how do you find the right weather for yourself to train and these when you're racing somewhere in a different state? What do you do?
So, most Vegas trail runners, what we'll do is stay in the valley when it's nice temperatures, when it's in the fall and when winter comes, because Mount Charlie, it's right in my backyard. I'm like more on the northwest side of Vegas. There, it gets completely covered in snow. And so, unless you're snowshoeing, you can't get to those summits. And so, we'll migrate down into the Red Rock area or Boulder City where it's cooler temps and you can actually run. I just went up today and did Griffith Peak, and there's still some snow up there, but I totally, like, I'm so excited. It's mountain running season. So, because, like, I have a lot of big races this coming summer between Leadville, and then I'm registered also for, I always butcher it, Mogollon Monster
Oh, the
100.
100. Yeah, that's a hard one too.
So I was looking back and my training for 2021, I did over 40 summits up at Mount Charleston between all the summits up there. Because we have maybe, well, there's a lot up there. So at least with Griffith, I had over 20 summits alone. Mount Charleston sits at 11,900 feet. Griffith's 11,500, and so most of our trailheads start at 8,000, and so most of all of my summer runs, almost all of them are up there, and so everything's at elevation, everything's with vert. Spending the whole day out there is the best. I have so much fun. I had so much fun today.
Do you do like repeats? Like, let's say, do you go up Mount? You call Mount Charlie. You go up and then down. Do you go back up again? Like, do you do like multiple summits in a day, or do you like for Ouray? How did you train for Ouray 50 miler?
Yeah, it was just all up there.
Okay.
And yes, you do repeat sometimes. Like there was one of the days I went from South Loop up to Griffith, up to Charlie, all the way back down to the parking lot, and then all the way back up to Griffith, down again. And that was, I'm gonna get the numbers wrong. It was a lot. It was over 20 miles and about 10K. So it's, you can get a lot of vert. And yeah, just doing a lot of that. And honestly, Ouray is just a long hike. You run when you can on the descents, but nobody's running any of those long climbs because they go on forever. It was beautiful. I'm so excited for you. I'm so excited for you.
I'm
Like, it's a
nervous.
beautiful course.
I'm
It's
so
hard.
nervous. What else did you do to prepare for weeks? You did a lot last year. You did a lot. That's actually how I found you through the Ouray hashtag. So it's really cool. I'm always trying to find other women, and it's awesome because I love seeing women doing these challenging races because we need more women out there. And this is one of the reasons why I'm doing the podcast, to encourage more women to do harder things and to step outside their comfort zone and to let them know, like, hey, like, you are capable of doing this. Like, you are also a badass. And it's like, you don't have to just be a guy to be able to do this. Like, anyone can do it.
Oh, 100%. I totally agree. I love that you've created this forum. I absolutely love it because I love seeing other badass women doing these hard things. A lot are scared to run by themselves or run at night, and having a friend if that's what you need to do. Like when I first started, I didn't know anybody doing these things, and I would go out for a 40 miler by myself in the middle of the night, and I would have a taser. Not a taser. I would have my pepper spray and a knife. And I would always have them. I always like, if anything came by, I was like, I was ready. I initially ran scared, but you get used to it after a while. But anyways, yeah, I love women challenging themselves to do something bigger, do something harder, you know.
What advice would you give to women that, you know, they want to do this, but they don't want to run by themselves, or they're scared to be out there on the trails by themselves? What words of encouragement do we want to give those women that, you know, they want to do it, but they're scared? Because we've all been there, right?
Right. Oh, for sure. We've all been there, you know, and if you do feel more comfortable having somebody else there, then organize your runs that way. There's nothing wrong with that. But just knowing for races, sometimes you will be alone in the middle of the night, and your training runs are the best time to work out all of those glitches, because you're going to be expending more energy being scared than if you had, you know, during the race when you could have already fixed that problem. And I still will get nervous in the middle of the night, you know, because you'll hear something, you know, or perhaps you think you got off trail, you know, like that. My light went out when I did Baby's Backyard, and I was out there completely by myself. There was only two other runners at that point in the middle of the night. I think it was like 1 o'clock in the morning or something. And my light went out, and all I had was my cell phone. And if anybody's ever tried to use their cell phone light on trail, it's nothing. So I'm like running like this. I was scared, and that just happened last year. So everybody still gets scared. It can happen. Like, I ended up off trail. I luckily made it back barely in time, but you know.
What helps you feel a little bit more confident to run on the trails at night? By yourself.
Yeah, honestly, I love night running. I love the fact that it's just quiet and your whole existence is whatever your light shines on. You know, it's peaceful for me, I feel like. You know, like I've gone into scuba back when I was 18, and just having the sounds of the regulator, you breathing, and then just having this whole blue world around you is so calming. I know that can stress other people, but it was soothing for me, you know? And it's kind of like the same feeling I get, like I'm in this like tank basically, and all I can see is just the light, and, you know, not getting completely zoned out though, that you're not paying attention to the flagging. But no, I love it. I enjoy it.
Have you seen any, like, a mountain lion or a bear out at night? Especially more at night, because I feel like they come out at night more than they do in the daytime.
My girl Sierra and I, we saw a mountain lion, but we weren't running. We were driving to the snowshoe race in Utah, and we saw a mountain lion cross the street. So I've actually never seen a mountain lion other than that. I ran into a bear one time when I was living in Georgia, and you just turn around. You try to be quiet. You turned around. It was cool, but I was like, all right, you live your life. I'm going to go over there.
Isn't it funny how you would think, like, I feel like we feel, at least the outsiders would think that you're constantly running into these wildlife, these big animals out on the trails. But in reality, it's like, no, it's actually a treat in a sense when you do get to see them, because it's so rare and so hard to see them. They know you're out there before you know they're out there. Like, they've been seeing you from, like, you're sniffing you from miles away. Like, they already know you're out there. And then usually they don't want to, you know, we're the predators on top of the food chain. Right. Like, we are the bad guys. So I think
changing. Yeah, they're trying to mind their own business.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, I promise I don't taste good. I do have one more question about Ouray. What do you feel really helped you finish that race when you were preparing for Ouray?
It was nice. I picked up Sam, my boyfriend, at mile 40. And so like the 50 miler is the last half of the 100 miler. Mm-hmm. So I didn't get to experience the first half, but, so your mile 90 to 100 is the 50 milers, mile 40 to 50. And it's basically this 10 mile, like 5 miles up, thousands, I think it's like 5,000 feet all the way up, and then 5,000 directly back down the same route that you went. So it's this last out and back. And having him with me, it was like right during sunrise, we were almost at the top ridge area, and just having another beautiful experience like that. Like, I was pretty beat up at that point, but to have, you know, a loved one during that experience was pretty awesome. And knowing I'm so close too, like I was so close, like it was a lot of climbing to get back, get to mile 45. But then you get to mile 45 and you're like, home stretch. You're almost there.
Even though I'm sure those 5 miles felt like the longest 5 miles.
They were. I don't even know how many hours it took us.
Hours with the S at the end. There is a question here. What is a good beginner's course? I'm not sure. Maybe in Las around Las Vegas, is there a trail that's good for beginners that you would recommend?
So Desert Dash is a local racing company that has races throughout the year. They just created a new 100K. I think the new month now is November because we did it last year in April and it was just a scorcher. It was so hot. So they have varying distances. Blood, Sweat, and Beers is actually pretty technical. It's at Bootleg Canyon in Boulder City. So perhaps not that one. A lot of blood I've seen. So I probably wouldn't recommend that one. It's a fun camaraderie one though. There's trails everywhere. You know, it just kind of depends if they meant like a race here or, you know, like there's technical trails, there's, you know, like groomed stuff. It's, you know, it's we got a lot of variety here.
Yeah, I would recommend going just to Ultra Sign Up, and then you could check the races, and then you can sort by difficulty. They even have that option, and then you can go from there, ultrasignup.com. There is a few questions that came here from the question box. So, any advice for your first time marathoner how to recover well? So this person did a marathon, a trail marathon. They did the, I believe, the Yosemite Marathon. And what do you do for recovery?
Well, congrats to them. That's awesome. Yeah, that's great. For recovery, I love the Epsom salt baths. I do those with the bath bombs. I also have had the leg squeezers. The company that I use is Elevated Legs. I've had that since 2015. This is my second set of them. They last forever, but I have the whole leg squeezer. It goes from like the tips of my toes all the way to my hip. And then they also have shorts where they literally like start here and go past your knees. And so leg squeeze after certain shifts at work where I've been on my feet for over 12 hours after races, you know, I've traveled with them. That'll be my extra carry-on or something. Yeah. I love those things. I use them. I use the leg squeezers at least more than half a week between work and running.
What there's another question here. Do you strength train? Do you do strength training? If so, how often and which body parts do you focus?
I used to be better with that. So I've been kind of bad. I've been kind of bad. I should do more of that. Yes. I should do it. I used to be a lot better with doing more core work and weights. It's something that I need to get back into for sure, and I will, especially now that like it's kind of the beginning of all big races for me. So for protection of my knee, my joints, everything, I'll be definitely reincorporating that. And I'm probably going to be also buying a row machine. I have in my house, I have it set up one of the rooms as a gym, and so I think I'll be adding that to it. So I'm pretty stoked because that used to be my circuit I would do when I had a gym membership. I don't have one anymore. Is I would do cardio on the treadmill, I would do the weights, and as I'm, you know, also doing cardio, I would do the row machine because you're getting all the upper body. You need to have that upper body strength holding your water bottle because I usually hold on to at least one, sometimes two, depends with my pack what's going on. And then just having like the hours with the trekking poles on like the more mountainous races, you know, like you can't have muscle, you know, failure due to that.
Do you do any other cross training right now?
I like yoga. I do like yoga. I used to do more cycling, things like that, but again, it's been kind of nice because I race so much that the last handful of months I've been kind of taking it easy, and I'm okay with that. You know, you can't be 100 all the time, you know, like you wear yourself out, and I'm notorious with overdoing it. I like on my off days, I have a post-it and I write all the things that I'm going to do. And as I'm doing them, I check them off. I have like my calendar. I have multiple calendars. I have my daily calendar that I post on Instagram. I have two more in the house. I have like three on my phone. Like I just love checking things off and having things on the plan.
So how do you, your trauma nurse, and do you work 12-hour shifts? Is that, because I know that's typically the nurse schedules, 12-hour shifts. How, if your schedule is constantly changing, how do you fit training? I'm sure your work schedule, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it messes up with your sleep because you get inconsistent sleep. Like just when you feel like you got your sleep pattern on, and then it's like, oh, we changed here, we're going to add another day, or we're taking a day, and then it's constantly changing. How do you fit and balance training for 100 miles for these big ultra races into having, you know, a high demanding job?
I feel that being a nurse is the best ultra training, honestly. It's when I used to work night shift, I was constantly sleep deprived. I was pretty consistently only getting 4.5 hours of sleep every single day. You get off at 7 a.m. and you try to sleep, but it's always difficult. Your body's not meant to be awake all night. And then I did that for years. And so going to races when people are ready to go to bed, I was just waking up because I was so used to always being awake in the middle of the night. Let it be 1 a.m., 5 a.m. Like that's my go time. So with that, not sleeping much, I was running even more when I was on nights. I've been on day shift. I switched probably over 6 months ago, and trying to find that balance because now I'm like actually sleeping. I get like 6 to 8 hours. It's amazing. My eyes aren't burning anymore. I feel like a zombie. I can think. It's this amazing day shift life, but it's now difficult trying to get my runs in. So I still need to try to find that balance. I haven't quite found that just yet. As far as, it is a 12-hour shift. I wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning. I don't get home till 7:30 p.m. The last thing I want to do at 4 a.m. or 7:30 p.m. is go run. My legs are usually tired, and so I don't run. Those are usually my off days. And then on my like no work days, I'll do, that's when I'll do all my runs. Let it be 2 a days to catch up for me not running those other days. Cause I used to love running at least 5 days a week. That was my pretty consistent. Yeah. I would take at least a day or 2 days off depending on how much mileage or time on feet I've been doing. But, yeah, that's something I need to still kind of figure out. Even if I do like maybe 30 minutes before work, that would actually probably be the most ideal. I just got to set that alarm earlier. It's the last thing you want to do at 4:30, 4 a.m.
Knowing you're going to go into a 12-hour shift. How did COVID, like 2020, I feel like I work in the healthcare, I work at a hospital, so I in the finance department. So in 2020, you know, the healthcare workers got really hit. Like if your job was already stressed, your job just became the most stressful job to have in 2020. How did you be able to continue managing your training, like as much as you were able to with the high demands of your job? Like mentally, like, did you have any crashes mentally where you're just like, oh my God, I don't think I can do this?
I think it was a lot of being tired because we were put on mandatory overtime. And so they took another day from us, basically. Every single week, so I was doing 4 12-hour shifts and trying to schedule your activities, your runs, with one day less, it's adding 33% more of your workload. It was definitely stressful, and you know, having even more patients than usual, not the ratios or anything like that, but just it was busy. It was very busy. And you know, it was good that we had each other, because trauma nursing can be very stressful, and I have a lot of really good friends that I work with, because we handle these stressful situations together. You know, if you have a crashing patient, you're never alone. You have each other. And so we'll debrief with a lot of that stuff. Having someone to talk to about all of that, you know, it was stressful for sure. You know, I had a lot of complaints, you know, that Sam had to hear, you know, but you just have to get through it, because there was no other choice. That's what the life was. You know, we were dealing with COVID. You know, I was fortunate though with being in trauma. Majority of my patients, I did not have to deal with COVID. I still had a lot of COVID patients because we still accepted them. But, you know, like NICU or the other ICUs, every single patient was COVID. Mm-hmm. And living with the N95 and all that stuff, like I had the plain surgical mask. You know, it can be a lot for sure.
So do you, for your training runs, do you rely a lot then on high volume in those 2 days, 1 or 2 days that you do have off, or in that time was like 2 days that you had off? And then now, do you feel like that has been working for you, or do you really want to do more miles? I know you said you want to incorporate those like at least 30 minutes before your work, but do you feel like if someone isn't able to get runs before or after work because they have 12-hour shifts, do you feel like just focusing on those 2-3 days that you have off on really high volume runs can help you be successful in ultra running?
I feel like it's worked for me, you know, because of my knee, I try to not do such heavy long runs on my off days. I try to split it up. So I'll usually take my dog out and he can do 5 miles like a champ. And so like I'll do like morning miles with him and then go back out and do something else. And so it's like you're getting the time on feet, the volume, but it's not as stressful as doing one big run. So I usually do 2 days, and I feel like that's been working for me so far. You know, but things don't always work the same, you know, consistently. Like it's working right now, but it may not work next year. You know, you just have to work with what your body's feeling, you know, because you can also overdo it. Just got to listen.
Has there any even point in your training where you just feel like, you know what, I can't do this anymore, where you feel like, I don't want to do ultra running, I can't do it? Or is ultra running just so much part of you that you're just like, I'm going to make this work no matter what?
Oh, I feel antsy if I haven't been running. I have to run. You know, it's like trauma is definitely one of those things that you need an outlet to release all of your stress, you know? And so if it's not running that I do forever, it'll be some kind of activity. You have to get this out of you, you know? Because I will deal with anxiety. I do, like, I have my bouts of depression here and there. It kind of varies. It comes out of nowhere. You know, mine usually doesn't last more than a day. I wake up the next day and it's gone. But running, even if I don't want to, and if it's my off day, I always try to get out, because you can't stay in bed. That's the last thing you should do. You know,
and how do you decide how much you're going to run? Like, is it depending on what you're training for, or is it based on feel? Do you have specific mileage goals?
I like to be around 55 to 65 once I start getting closer to like race time, which is about now. Like these last couple months, I've been not doing as much. Like I'll have some heavy weeks and then the next week I'll take it easy. Just kind of going with feel. But I would say if you're going to train in any way, train specific for what your next race is. You know, like for your age, you got to climb, girl. You got a lot of hiking in your future. You got a lot of that, you know. And so you gotta just do that. I feel like I was well trained for Ure. I feel like that there wasn't more I could have done for that. And going to Kodiak the next month after that, I felt strong, but I wasn't as used to running because I did so much hiking because of Ure. So it's, you can't be ready for every type of race all the time. And so like I was still able to push it for Kodiak, but I definitely didn't have as strong running legs as I did like climbing legs for that race.
What are some things that you would tell people to look at? So if they signed up for a race, what are things that they should look at the race so they can do their training? Like they can schedule their training, look at what they need to train for. If they're training according to race, what are some things that you would recommend, especially for those, and this is targeted more, beginner runners, they just signed up for their first ultra. What do you recommend them look at when they're like, okay, I signed up for this race, how do I go about my training? What should they look at when they sign up for a race?
Well, look at the profile. I think that's a very quick way of kind of getting an idea of what you just signed up for is how much elevation gain is there? And then what state are you in? Is it going to be hot? Is it going to be cold? What are the distances between the aid stations? Do you need to use a drop bag? If you do have a drop bag, what are the essentials that you will put in there? Or if you have crew, what responsibilities are you going to give them? If you don't use a drop bag, profile is always one of the very first things I look at when I'm like signing up for a race because it gives you a good grasp of what to expect, and then yeah, the distances between the aid stations and the support. Most of them will give a descriptor on supplies at aid stations, and so you can kind of figure out what you need to bring and not bring. I'm very fortunate that if it's like 100K or less, I can only eat Huma gels and I'm totally fine. And so I'll have maybe one banana, maybe a couple bananas later at the end of the race. I usually don't incorporate caffeine until the second half of the race or the last third of the race because you want it to work when at the end when you're more tired. You don't necessarily need caffeine at the start. Just that.
Would you eat for your like more than 100K races, like for the 100 milers? If you're not eating Huma gels, what are you eating?
The backyard races, I love mashed potatoes. So I'll eat a lot of mashed potatoes. It's very easy. You don't have to chew it. You're literally just, it's disintegrating in your mouth. It's like one less effort that you have to do. Bananas. I leave it very simple. Oh, cup of soups. I'm obsessed with cup of soups. It was
What's
so
that?
good. There's cup of soup, cup of noodle.
Oh.
Yeah, sorry. Cup of noodle. Because it's all salt. You got the carbs, Soup just tastes amazing. Even if it's hot, I'll eat cup of noodle. I'll do a lot of soup, basically the entire rest second half of a 100 miler. That's the main thing that I'll eat. I don't usually eat off of aid stations because I have a severe nut allergy. And so COVID was nice because it actually made the aid stations a little bit more hygienic with cross-contamination issues. And so I usually only eat what I bring.
How do you manage to carry? Do you just carry all your stuff for that section that you know you're not going to get your drop bag or your crew to? Like you just like, all right, I guess I'm just going to have to carry extra calories because if you're not going to rely on the aid stations, you just do that.
Yeah, if I'm not using a drop bag, I carry all of it.
Wow.
Because I that's another thing with aid stations that they're a great support, but you can lose so much time in a race with aid stations. I'm very quick with the ins and outs with those. Like I always have my trash in my hand before I even get there, so I don't forget to throw it away. I got my bottles ready. I already usually even eat an extra Huma gel so that I already have calories in for the next 45 minutes. And so that's more trash I can get rid of. That's the main thing I would say also is just to pay attention on how much time you're potentially wasting. Don't sit. I don't sit either.
Do you change shoes like for Ure? How did you manage with the weather, like constantly changing? I'm sure it was like sunny and warm in a day, and then like storms later on, and then rain later on. Like how did you manage to deal with all the different changes?
I had a lot of gear in my pack prepared for every type of weather. I had waterproof pants and the jacket. I had a windbreaker, gloves, all of the extras. The 50 miler doesn't start till noon. So I had like the whole morning, and it was like this beautiful day, and the 100 milers the previous day had hail and lightning storms, and it was pouring rain. And then, like, the next morning, it was gorgeous. And then, an hour into the race, it starts pouring rain. And so, I did get rained on, but it wasn't as bad as I guess the 100 milers had gotten it the day before. And so, I kept all of that gear on me the entire race until mile 40, basically. Then, I finally got rid of the pants. And then I kept the windbreaker, but I got rid of all the rain stuff because the forecast had there was definitely not going to be an issue for that last 10 miles.
So it's constantly looking at, like, already knowing what the weather was going to be for the next 24 hours of your run, and then just constantly getting your crew to kind of update you. What's the weather looking like? What's the weather looking like?
Yeah, having that kind of intel can save you on the weight of your pack for sure.
And there's another question. You said drop bag. So explain to us what a drop bag is for those that do not know, on when it comes to ultra running. I know a drop bag is a term we use a lot. As ultra runners.
You have this course, let it be whatever, like point to point or big old circle, whatever it is, and you have the aid stations. If you don't have crew access or you want extra of your own supplies, you can label a bag with your bib, your name, and you can put, usually it's like a small, like I don't know, this size, and you can put whatever kind of supplies in there that you think you're going to need at whatever point of the race that you put those. And so I tend to, it depends on the distance. If it's less than 50, I usually don't use any bag. 100Ks, if it's more in the fall where you don't have as much daylight hours, I'll tend to use a drop bag for my headlamp. And then maybe if I need extra clothing, always wet wipes are in there, just a nice refreshing, like just try to get some of the day off of you. It feels good. 100 milers, it varies. It depends on what the race is, but I usually have crew and I usually rely on them for that. They're my moving drop bag.
Yeah. Have you ever done like a 100K or 100 miler without any crew and or a pacer?
I have it. And I do want to experience that because it's a different type of challenge, and I do want to challenge myself in that way. But when you get to mile 60 or sunset, that's usually when you can pick up a pacer. It's so nice to see a familiar face. You've had the day on your body, on your feet, and just to have a conversation with a friend or your loved one or whoever, it can make a world of difference. You can usually get a second wind just having their presence there. Even if you're like, there's been times I've picked up pacers and I'm like, I don't have energy to talk. Like, you can talk to me. I can't talk. And they'll try to distract you any which way, but it is a thing that I would like to try, but I love having someone there. It's kind of the whole point of the ultra running part too. Like, not to some degree, it's the community, like we keep coming back and we create like different events because, oh, so and so is going to be there, or we can share this time together. It's part of what makes this sport so great.
Yeah, the community is amazing. And the more right now, honestly, I'm having so much fun interviewing so many different women because it's exciting to see what works for other people. And also it's like, wow, like it's not, even though we may be like, let's say we race a same race, one day we run the same race, we're not really racing against each other. We're racing against ourselves, and we're racing against the clock most of the time and the environmental elements. So it's nice to see them supporting each other. Once you meet other ultra running, you meet new ultra running friends, they end up becoming one of your closest friends because you get so close. Like if I ever pace you, it's like we end up telling our whole life story in that 6, 8 hours that we get to run together. So it we really create really tight bonds. So I definitely recommend to, allow yourself to connect with other people out on the trails. Okay, I have two last questions. I know we've running a little bit over time, Maya. So what is your bucket list race? What's a race you really want to do? And it's like kind of like, oh, I really want to do this race one day.
Oh man, UTMB.
Nice.
Yeah, I would love to go race in Europe, run through the Alps.
Oh, I can totally see you doing that and crushing it too. I can totally see you doing that and crushing it.
Oh man, yeah, I would love to do. I started trying to accumulate points for this back in 2015, and then I ended up because my goal during that time was to try to do one international race a year. And I started off with Tarawera in New Zealand. And then I did a stage race, the Grand to Grand. It's self-supported. It's 7 days, however many crazy amount of miles. And yeah, I started accumulating points for it. And then, I don't know, life happened. And then I got a different goal and I didn't go back to counting all my points together. So it's something I want to do.
It's a
UTMB,
process that's
UTCC.
changing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's good. Like I would like to do it and hopefully one day it happens. That's definitely one of them. Hard Rock would be amazing. I honestly do want to go back and do your 800 though. I got a taste of the second half and I want to feel the first half too.
Yeah. You'll do great. I based on what I've been seeing on you, on what you've been doing and the things, the type of mountain races that you do, it's like you're gonna do Leadville, which I'm excited to see you follow that journey. That's gonna be exciting for you this summer. And you have Mount Charlie right there, which I think it's interesting because I don't know that many Nevada runners and Las Vegas runners or that run in that area. But the only reason I found out about this is because my avid hiking friends are out there hiking these big mountains.
Oh,
But
yeah.
not, I don't really see runners running these big mountains. So it's nice to know there's actually ultra runners up there racing or
You'll
running those
see
things.
once the summer comes, there's a ton of us up there. We just take it over. You'll see us all over the place. We make the big plans on gonna connect this summit to that summit. You ready for it? We're gonna be out there all day. We love it. It's so
When I
great.
when my next time I plan to go out there, I'm gonna stock your Strava. Just like I'm gonna see what kind of routes I can steal from Maya.
I'll take you.
Okay, I'll let you know then. All right, Maya. Well, before I let you go, my last question for you is, what has ultra running taught you?
Oh man, literally everything. I feel like I didn't know who I was before I started this whole thing. I feel like I had a sort of an idea, but it wasn't until going through what I've gone through with each race experience, through the long run trainings and the community that's my home for sure. This is my home, and that I'm a better person because of it too. I am more patient. I'm more kind to myself and to others when maybe I wasn't as kind to myself in the past. And so, and then helping others too. It's you never, I didn't get into this to try to inspire others, and I get messaged or told that I do, and I like it's a happenstance but I love it. I appreciate the honor of that people look up to me, and any kind of way I can support them back, I love to give that love too. Also independence. Yeah, it's taught me everything. I absolutely love it. I recommend it to everybody.
Why do you think it's that? Why do you think ultra running makes such a big impact in our lives, not just in athletic wise, but in our as a person? Why do you think it's that?
I think people just get so comfortable with the day by day, and to take yourself, remove yourself from the comforts and to really investigate yourself. Like, who are you? You know, you can learn that on the trail by yourself or with friends, but it's going through these experiences that what only 1% of the population of the world has ever experienced. Like, it's mind changing. You know, there's a reason why we keep going back and doing it. It's everything.
Yeah, very, very beautifully said, Maya. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm glad we finally got a chance to talk. And yeah. It's amazing how fast time goes by. I'd be like, oh, I have enough time. And next thing you know, it's like, oh my God, we're out of time.
I had a great time. Thank you. Thank you for asking me to come on this. This was fun.
Thank you for joining. And if you're listening this through the podcast, so if you're hearing this, Maya's Instagram is Maya Birdie Goat. So you guys could follow her at Maya, M-A-I-A, Birdie, B-I-R-D-Y, and then Goat on Instagram. I will also share her IG handle. Thank you, everyone who joined us today and for engaging, participating. Make sure you guys follow Maya. She's so incredible athlete. Seriously, you're doing amazing things. And I'm shocked I haven't heard from you any sooner, because I see you running races here in Southern California. So I know that our lives will cross paths soon.
Absolutely. Well, and congratulations at Leona, by the way.
Thank you.
I'm very proud of you. That's awesome.
Thank you, and happy belated birthday.
Thank you. All right. 40, well, crazy.
40. You're just getting started.
Thank you. Yes, I agree.
All right, guys. Have a wonderful night, and until next time. Bye.